If Stephen Moffat loves the story so much, he decided to use the Doctor Who budget to commission you to remake Power of the Daleks.
Two versions aren't enough for you.
Would you choose to make it in widescreen and colour, or 4:3 in black and white?
I'd probably stick to black and white. I also thought that was fabulous in black and white. Yeah, I would stick with the black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah, make it wide angle.
So you would. Hang on. We've got the budget, we've got the money, we've got the go-ahead, and I'll do it, I'll commit. And then you phone up and you say that 4x3 in black and white, and I'm going to pitch that. Hello, is that BBC America? Exciting new plan.
Thank you very much.
I'm with you. I would make the show like that now.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Doctor Who on Target. The podcast where we discuss the target range of classic Doctor Who novelizations from the 1970s and 80s. Those long ago days where, if you missed Doctor Who on TV, you missed it forever. Unless, of course, you bought the Target novelisation. So, join us, jump aboard the TARDIS, set the time rotor for late 20th century Earth, and, with a wheezing, groaning sound, we'll discuss Doctor Who on Target.
I'm incredibly excited because we've just been to see The Power of the Daleks, the new animation at the BFI, and I'm here with David. David, can you tell us where we are?
Yes, must apologise if you can hear train sounds. We're actually by the side of the River Thames. We're on the opposite side of the river. We're at the South Bank Centre, opposite side of the river to Charing Cross Station. From where we are, we can see St Stephen's Tower, Queen Elizabeth Tower, Big Ben, whatever you want to call it, we can see the post office tower. We're just next door to the BFI in London.
And I've just noticed the post office tower, and I'm feeling a bit scared already because
it's prickling. The prickling sensation.
There's something happening.
There's something alien about that tower.
There really is. Very strange.
Gosh. Anyway.
Well, David, do you understand what did you think of it? We've just come out. Literally.
We've just come out of this first screening where we had some guests as well, didn't we? We had Doctor Who fan Frank Skinner, who played Perkins in Mummy on the Orient Express. He introduced the screening. Then we watched the first episode.
Yeah.
Then the creatives behind the animation came out and spoke to us for a little while, including Mark Ayres, who did the sound restoration and famously worked on Classic Who as well.
He was a bit disappointed.
And then he was disappointed only in the technical aspects of the amplification of his sound. It's a 5.1 mix apparently, and they were only putting it through the BFI speakers in mono.
But it still sounded fabulous.
It was just fabulous. It's ever so good. So what I am going to pitch right in there, because I'm going to try and remember things in sequence, and then we can talk about what was said at the panel afterwards.
Yeah.
The final panel with the star guests who came out. The first thing I noticed about it actually was I hadn't realised until I saw the animation that the Doctor, when he regenerates, he's got the new clothes on. You know how in a regular regeneration there's always a bit of a crossover when the body changes and you see the old Doctor's costume for a bit.
Yeah.
But in this one you had William Hartnell's ring, which provided the continuity, but he had the baggy check trousers on from the word go, and he had the scruffy frock coat from the word go, and not the Edwardian gentleman of William Hartnell's Doctor. That's the first thing I noticed.
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself, because I thought I was getting confused, because he did have the trousers on ready, didn't he?
He had the trousers,
and it was a beautiful touch with the ring, though, wouldn't he?
The ring, yes.
Because it falls off his finger.
He falls off him because he's got a... a hand that's now different in size.
Yeah.
And it won't actually pass onto his finger, because that's Ben's test, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're a doctor, then this ring will fit. Oh, no, it doesn't. So I noticed that. And then the other thing, and they did pick up on it themselves, I also like the fact that they put in Patrick Troughton's dead tooth, his black tooth.
That was brilliant. Did you pick up on that before
Fraser Hines mentioned it, yes.
That's brilliant attention to detail.
And I thought that was very good attention to detail on the animation.
Yeah. Sorry, David, go on.
No, I was going to say, so those are the first things that struck me, and the other thing that we've touched on is the absolute clarity of the soundtrack.
Yeah.
A gentleman called Graham Strong was in the audience, who's the 60s fan who taped the missing episodes, and he's got the best recordings, and rightly the audience gave him a round of applause for capturing that.
Absolutely.
Because without his work, we'd all, you know, our Doctor Who knowledge would be a lot poorer.
Absolutely.
So I was pleased that they'd invited him and that he came and took a plaudit that he fully deserved.
Absolutely, he did. Because without that, we'd have nothing.
We would have nothing,
no,
would we?
We wouldn't be able to do the telly snaps. They're another source, but they're very fragmented sort of source.
And of course they made a mistake there, because John Cura would have been commissioned to do that by Christopher Barry, the director, rather than the BBC, before videotapes and DVDs, etc. The only way directors could have a visual record of their work, it seems, was to pay a man to photograph it straight off the telly at transmission.
So that was the commission it would have come from?
So it would have come from the director.
Right, yeah. Well,
or perhaps the producer, but it would have come from the creatives rather than the BBC hierarchy, so
yes.
We mustn't give the BBC any credit for having any foresight there. Just want to correct that one before we go on. But yes, no, wasn't it amazing? It's the same, the animation, I don't know if the listeners have seen it at all, but it's the same folk who did the Dad's Army episode, A Stripe for Fraser.
Yeah.
But they have spent more money on it.
Yeah.
And it was the same animation style, and perhaps the material justifies a more basic animation, and that's exactly what it's got, due to the budgetary constraints. But it was really, really effective.
Yeah.
And very soon into episode one, I forgot that I was watching a simulation.
I thought
I was watching proper Doctor Who.
I had that too. Well, I was forgetting it about there were the odd little bits that brought it back. But by and large, I was sucked right into it, and I
don't know if you noticed it, but there were a couple of slight hesitancies with the lines on the audio.
Yes.
And they actually bothered to animate the lips for the mistakes.
they did, didn't they?
Rather than just do what they could have done, which was just to cut the sound file.
Yeah, yeah.
And just make it right.
That was beautiful to do that. But you know, the right at the beginning, I was really taken with, I think one of the producers, did they mention the film noir type effect?
Oh yes, they said they lit it from the floor.
Yeah, and it was fab, wasn't it? I thought it looked really atmospheric and foreboding.
Oh,
it had that feeling of,
it was done with so much love, I think. It was an absolute labour of love on the part of the people who did it.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And, we forgive the slight jerkiness. The animation is far more Captain Pugwash than it is Toy Story.
Oh,
but we forgive that.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
They are prepared to put this much resource into doing it.
Yeah.
And I think we have to celebrate the fact that they did that.
Yeah.
So,
and it was deliberate commission to do black and white, was it? It was because I don't know if people are aware, but there's going to be a colour version coming out on Blu-ray, which they talked about, didn't they?
They did. They said that a company in Canada, they said that midway through the process, the gentleman who was responsible for the animation, having basically set out an argument as to why it should be black and white, they said BBC America all of a sudden wanted it done in colour. And so they've now got a company in Canada to colourise it.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's made brand new in high definition, and now they've taken it to be colourised.
Yes, they've taken it to be colourised, but I think I think that black and white, although it was originally made in black and white because that is what was available, and that's that was the television standard in this country.
Yeah.
I think when people are being particularly artsy with their films, they might make a film in black and white. I'm thinking, I'm trying to think of the latest film I can think that was made, which would be, the one about the silent films.
Silent Movie, wasn't it?
No. Was it The Artist?
The Artist.
And people actually, people actually walked out the cinema because they had to start putting signage up to say this film is silent and in black and white.
Oh,
that's
really?
How non-used to it we are.
Whoa.
But I'm thinking something also like The Elephant Man,
which
was made in 1980. Oh. Purposefully in black and white to get that film noir look.
Yeah, yeah.
To get that old fashioned. It's. I suppose shadows just look better in black and white, don't they?
Well, they do. I always remember when we used to watch. I remember when colour TV we had our first colour TV in 1980. I think. When did Princess Di get married? When was that? Was it 1980?
That was 81.
81. Well, that's when we got our first colour TV for that. Prior to that, I'd always watched Doctor Who in colour. And I remember our black and white TV showed the older ones when they showed them in the five faces of Doctor Who.
Yes.
In the black and white. It seemed to show. It has a tone about it. Is that the right expression? A sort of tone.
It has a quality. It has. Yeah. It has an atmosphere of its own.
Yeah.
And the animators brilliantly captured that.
Yeah,
they absolutely brilliantly recreated, and they married up the animation to the soundtrack so well that I know it was a simulation, but I felt as if I was seeing Patrick Troughton's actual performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I would love to see.
They did put those little facial expressions in, didn't they? Which the little smiles, the little... And I noticed as well that they did the eyes really well, I thought. Did you notice that?
There was real mischief in the eyes.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
yes,
I liked the eyes, yeah.
There was real character.
Yeah.
They'd obviously map the characters very, very, very well. I mean, I would say probably of the regular cast, obviously they've invested most time and effort into the Doctor.
Yeah.
Ben wasn't particularly Michael Craze looking. I mean, he worked as an animation.
Yeah.
He was. I mean, there were a couple of and Polly worked very well as well.
I thought she looked good. Polly,
she was
in
good,
the animation.
Wasn't she?
Yeah. I did think though. Possibly the best animation. I thought they didn't want to take much credit for them, but I thought the Daleks looked great.
The Daleks were absolutely fantastic.
They really they captured that real feel of them. That and they were doing the eyes. Were we having the iris effect then?
Well, the iris effect was something that was recreated for the various tele-reconstructions, the recons, so that it's always known that the Dalek's iris moves.
Right.
And that was the one thing that they could do with the still pictures, is kind of do a rudimentary animation of the Dalek looking. I remember very clearly, it's taking me back now, and I haven't actually considered this, but the first Doctor Who recon, I believe I'm right in saying, was Power of the Daleks episode 2.
Right, right.
And I remember that appearing on VHS in our local group, Mark Top Secret, obviously.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, wow, this is like watching the actual story. And of course it wasn't. It was another simulation. And I sort of connected with all those feelings and was surprised that when, especially during episode 2, which I must have watched to death from this recon, I was surprised how much of it, particularly the chap with the film camera, and the Dalek zaps him, and it's all a bit of a cock-up.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, the man actually is killed by the Dalek, but they don't let on to Lesterson, that's what's happened.
And they do the nice...
I thought, they had on the recon, they had like a black piece of card with a circle, and it could move across the stills.
They did all of that stuff. I didn't realise.
And this is taking recons up to the next level.
Yeah.
So I think, I think the animations that we've had for Doctor Who, The Invasion, I think that was one of the very best.
Yeah.
And then you get the ones like that I haven't actually seen, like The Reign of Terror, which were very much derided in fan circles. And I've heard it's very busy and almost like that Japanese
I didn't like it. I loved the Invasion animation, but I have to say, the Reign of Terror, I was very disappointed. The style which they adopted in that didn't fit in with the style of the story.
Because it's actually quite a static story, isn't it? It's actually quite wordy.
Yeah.
Not an awful lot happens though in those episodes, if we're blunt.
Yeah, no, I didn't like those. But this animation...
But this animation was took it to the next level.
Absolutely, yeah. It was like beautiful. Some moments where there was the piece where when they first find the Daleks in the ship, they've got huge cobwebs.
Oh, the cobwebs, Yes, that's one of the few bits of the there was a trailer discovered a while ago, and it features the opening of the capsule and with all the Dalek cobwebs. It's only a very, very short piece of film, and I think it's probably on the Lost in Time DVDs. And that was just fantastic, the detail with the cobwebs between the Dalek gunstalks.
It was lovely. He said it took him a week, I think he said,
to animate the cobwebs.
Yeah, and it did look fab.
And it looked fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, there were some, they did say they can't do it exactly as it was on the film for reasons of animation. Like you said about the walk-in. I mean, I will say some of the walk-in scenes, how would you describe some of the walk-in?
Well, I've described it as being more Pugwash than Pixar.
Yeah, and I think that describes it beautifully, yeah. But thankfully, there aren't too many of them.
The Dad's Army animation that they did was very much in the same style. And I understand that because it's a good job there was no actual chasing around in the story.
Yeah.
Because you could only do that as a sort of a mid-shot.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd have to commit to animating all those leg movements,
which would
just not work in that style.
No, they wouldn't work in that style.
It would be too busy. Yeah. But pictures had to be simplified.
Yeah.
It can't be too busy.
And I think they said they couldn't do big wide shots either, could they? Because they said that would be too complicated. But the way they have done it, which it genuinely was done in a film noir style anyway, is that, you know, well, the lighting anyway, was it? And I think... The sort of tight close-up shots of faces and the two shots and the upper body, they all fit it perfectly.
They all
anyway.
Work very well, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
I think particularly, I mean, there were a couple of actors that I recognised in the cartoon elsewhere in Doctor Who. An actor called Bernard Archard played Bragan. And he was very, very well animated, and I know that face so well.
What was he in? What was the other story?
Well, now you're asking me. I think he may have been in... wasn't he in Spearhead from Space as Major General Scobie?
Was that him? I think it might have been.
Bernard Archard? He was definitely in the Dad's Army movie, making another link to Dad's Army. But he's been... And I think his other thing is... Pyramids of Mars.
Oh,
didn't he play?
He was the brother.
He was, yes, Lawrence Scarman, and there's another Scarman, and I always get confused which one's Michael Sheard and which one's Bernard Archard.
I think Bernard Archard was the one.
Well, he was the possessed one.
I think he was.
And the brother was trying to save him.
Yes, I think that's right.
With very little positive outcome, I'm
afraid. Yeah. But of course, because he had that intensity in his acting style.
I think, he had that sort of low brow and those hooded eyes. And,
yeah.
Oh, and that's the other thing I noticed in the animation is they gave Patrick Troughton very, very deep set. Black shadowy eyes,
they did.
And that added to his mystery and his,
particularly
in the very first scenes when there's perhaps a doubt in the original viewers' minds: is this really what William Hartnell now looks like?
Yeah.
Is there a doubt here?
Yeah.
Mm.
I think you know, it was it's such a good story as well that you know, you've got this sort of duplicity going on with the characters and sort of what shenanigans going on in the background, is it, when they're trying to gain control to get the
politics.
You've got
the rebel group
you
know, and obviously Lesterson's tied into that
and
you know, they've actually, now the technician's been killed, the rebels have actually got a hold on him to do what they wish, and I don't wish to second guess where this might go, but in some way I think the Daleks are being viewed as useful come the revolution, but they're just not going to be having any of that because they've got their own they've got their own agenda.
Well, it's actually
pretty obvious.
Yeah. Well, it's actually the evil ones that are pulling the strings of all these people. And well, actually, it's making me think a bit now. What's going on with the election in America?
Right.
I wonder if there's any. No, perhaps I'm taking it too far. There's a with that. Mm. But so, what else do you think, Dave?
What else did I love? I tell you what else I loved.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the Dalek animation and how good that was.
Yeah.
And it was. And the other thing I really, really enjoyed hearing was hearing Peter Hawkins' Dalek voices again.
Oh, yes.
They make the hairs on the back of your head stand on end. They really are wonderful.
He's got a different voice for each Dalek, isn't he?
He does a different voice.
And it's bizarre because they're not meant to be emotional in Dalek, but they are certainly their own characters, aren't they?
Yes, very much so.
Because I think I leant across and said to you, who's doing the Dalek voices?
Peter Hawkins.
Yeah, because they were so good. Mm. And I thought, because we are used
Unless
to...
Unless they got Nick Briggs to redub them.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they did that. No, but it was it was just really a great atmosphere here. I love the atmosphere.
The actual, it was a very friendly atmosphere in the auditorium. Everybody was there. Apologies there, a piece of paper flew off in the wind. We're outside in the cold, as I explained. No, it was a very friendly atmosphere. Everybody wanted to be there. Everybody had a real sense of anticipation.
Yeah.
There was a buzz.
Yeah.
We could see various people in the auditorium.
Yeah, there was.
And there were, you know, they thought, oh, this is a big event. This is happening. This is something.
This is great. And of course, you know, the people who were involved in the making of that, or their families were here as well. Mm. They? So it was really great. And the panel, well, first of all, can I say, you've got to buy it. Everybody's got to buy it.
Oh, absolutely. This has to be supported.
Yeah.
Buy it from the BBC shop as a download, buy it as a DVD, buy it as a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It's in everybody's interest that this thing has wings and flies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that they get round and animate something else.
Yeah, it's got to be done, because greater job as Phil Morris is doing. You know, he's still got some work to do, and these will keep us going in the meantime.
These will keep us going while Phil completes his search. I think he has completed it, but as he negotiates or whatever he's doing, hopefully there's more, but we don't know. Only Phil knows that, and he won't tell anyone, so that's that.
Well, hopefully one day very soon in the future we might be here, David, talking about some more rediscovered episodes that we've got to
see. And especially if they're premiered at the BFI, I think I should get you back down.
Absolutely, it'd be fabulous. Well, moving on to the panel, what did you think? We had a great panel at the end, didn't we? What did you think? We had Stephen Moffat, we had Annika Wills.
We did.
We had
Derek Dodd, who was the designer, the original designer.
Yeah.
He was the gentleman on our extreme left. We had Derek Dodd, Graham Harper, who was a very junior sort of runner on the show for a portion of the making of it.
Yeah.
Who else did we have? Next to him, we had Stephen Moffat that you mentioned.
Yes, Stephen Moffat.
Then we had Fraser Hines, wasn't involved in the footage, but was nevertheless an expert on Patrick Troughton, so he was along for the ride.
Yeah.
Then we had lovely Annika Wills.
Yes.
And then we had a gentleman called Justin Johnson, who works at the BFI.
Yeah.
And him and another gentleman in the audience, Dick Fiddy, do these wonderful events.
Yeah.
At BFI, and I think I'm right in saying that Dick Fiddy was instrumental in the return of the Two Dads Army episodes that they got a few years back.
Well,
so he's you know, I mean, what a fantastic job he must have just watching stuff all the time.
That's brilliant.
And they're the programmers for on that sort of strand of the BFI's program. They decide what goes on
and they've got
a good job there. I'd like to watch things for a living.
That would be great, actually. That would be great. Mind you didn't do too badly today, David, because you won a competition.
I did win a competition. It had nothing to do with wanting to win that DVD. Well, no, I didn't want the DVD. I wanted to win it.
Yeah. The competitive streak came out.
I'm afraid so. And I've used that technique before in there to win a signed Blake 7 CD, which I think I put into storage actually. I didn't. I just wanted to win. I didn't want. I didn't want the prize. I just wanted to win.
I will say that Stephen Moffat also won a prize as well regarding himself, and he won the DVD. And you did actually.
He
shout
won a
out,
Blu-ray.
He won a Blu-ray, and you did shout out Fix, but they still let it go.
They let it go, didn't they? Yeah. The question was who came third in some Doctor Who trivia quiz that they'd had in Australia.
Yeah. For some reason, Stephen Moffat knew the answer.
Yeah, he did know that.
Knew it quickly.
I'm still buzzing from seeing that footage. Yeah. I am really, really enthusiastic about it.
Well, we hope to have this up tomorrow. I'm assuming everyone should have seen the first episode by then.
Well, they'll be downloading it tonight, won't they?
Absolutely.
At 10 to 6 this evening, the first one goes live on BBC Worldwide Shop, the BBC store.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to do it was 50 years ago today tribute, you'll be able to watch it.
Yeah, that's incredible to think, isn't it?
50 years ago.
Yeah.
67.
Yeah. Whoa,
1967, fractionally before we were both born, actually.
Yeah, it is just fractionally before. And I just think the time is marching on with these, you know, but they are still, because a couple of the people made a comment about some of the programmes, you know, from that day. I think it was Stephen Moffat, actually, said that although some things have returned, it's not like Doctor Who is in. There's something really brilliant when Doctor Who is returned.
It's special when Doctor Who is returned.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And of course, I wasn't the only person making noise in that auditorium because you actually asked a question.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember your question?
It was
a technical question.
Oh, yes. Yeah, with Graham. I asked Graham Harper if Stephen Moffat gave him some of Doctor Who's budget to remake Power of the Daleks. They thought it was quite... funny, actually. I think they did, didn't they?
I thought it was a serious question.
Yeah,
you know?
I did as well, but they took it as
they took it the wrong way.
They did.
No, but the bottom line was that Stephen Moffat was up for remaking it 4x3 black and white.
So you
and I think Peter Capaldi would excel in that material,
imagine?
Because the story is so strong, and it was lovely at the end of the panel. They pay tribute to Dennis Spooner.
Oh, yes.
Who, of course, died many, 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 many years ago. In the late 80s. But it seemed that some of his family were in.
Yeah.
And he got a round of applause for the excellent work he'd done taking David Whittaker's scripts, which were known to be quite detailed and unstructured, I think.
Yeah.
And they needed some editing and Dennis Spooner had pulled the script round and made it into compelling viewing.
Yeah.
And it was compelling.
Yeah, it was absolutely
compelling.
It's just a brilliant story. I'd never heard until last year the Power of the Daleks was something, and a friend of mine said, listen to the audio, which obviously has come from the gentleman there tonight.
From Graham Strong,
Graham Strong.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't really want to listen to it without it. But I bought it, and actually, even just the audio track is compelling, as you said.
It sells it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, it's fab. And I just thought, they make comments about Pat Troughton, although they acknowledge that William Hartnell's Doctor is fabulous and they love him, but they talked about Pat Troughton bringing the Doctor as the centre stage of the show.
Oh, they did, didn't they?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
They,
what do you think about...
They placed him at the centre of the show.
Because you're a big fan of William Hartnell.
I am a huge fan of William Hartnell because, of course, he was a proper film star.
Yeah.
You know, in the film that William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton made together, Hartnell was the star of it.
Yeah.
Troughton was on the periphery, I think, because he was very much starting out in his career at that time.
Yeah.
But yes, he was... William Hartnell had a presence, and it's a different presence to Patrick Troughton.
Yeah.
I don't want to sort of go off on one of my famous tangents, but many, 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 many years ago, I went to an event at the National Theatre with Alec Guinness, who famously was in Star Wars.
Wow.
And he explained some of his acting method. And his acting method was he found an animal for the role, And he played the character as that creature. And George Smiley, I think, was some sort of bird of prey.
Oh,
He was a peregrine falcon or an eagle
or
something, and always observing, always darting around. And I think William Hartnell, to pull it back, I think William Hartnell's performance had a sort of that kind of style, watching, observing, and then coming in with telling points when it mattered.
Yes.
I felt, you know, he drew the eye with his performance, and Patrick Troughton drew it for different reasons, because he was obviously more of a physical actor because he was a younger man.
Yes, yeah.
And so he was able to do a bit more physical business and to do a bit more comedy.
Yes.
And there was a little tick, because they said, you know, they said that as a comedian, Frank Skinner said the thing about Trout's performance was he was sort of turning on a sixpence, because he could say something absolutely apocalyptic and then he could say something utterly trivial in the next line.
As we saw today.
And we saw today, you know, he was saying, look, you know, if there was a bomb under this floor, you wouldn't want my permission before you ripped the floor. Oh, fruit!
Yeah. And at the whole auditorium burst into laughter. Yeah,
burst into laughter because he turned on this comic sixpence.
Yeah, brilliantly.
He was, yes.
And Stephen Moffat was saying about the story that when he'd cast Matt Smith, and I think Matt Smith was somewhere in a hotel room and he was watching Tomb of the Cybermen, which he'd never seen before. And he said he phoned him up in the middle of the night saying, he's brilliant, he's so fabulous.
I'm going to wear a bow tie.
Yeah, that's right. You got the line, yeah, that's it. Fabulous, yeah. So, you know, getting these insights into this in here is great, because you get to see and appreciate it more, I think.
And I think the other wonderful thing, actually, about having Stephen Moffat there, who obviously is the world's biggest fanboy, and he knows that he's in the company of fanboys, and he sort of plays to it and is quite amusing and you know, and all the rest of it. I think though that it's nice that there's this sort of golden thread running between the classic Who and the new Who. It's nice that it all joins up and intermeshes. And it's it's bringing the old and the new together.
Yeah,
and absolutely. It's just lovely. Yeah. It's an absolute unique show, and it's so wonderful that it's so adored and that it's. Yeah. Its influence, and of course, I must say before we stop recording, actually, that the other thing that Terence Dix.
Oh yeah, of
Moffat
course.
Paid tribute to Terence Dix and his concise, exciting prose in a Target book.
He did, didn't
What's
he?
What's your favourite Target book? Now let me think about that. I'm compiling lists at the back of my mind, and he was obviously teasing the questioner.
Chronic.
And what's my favourite cover? Yeah. And what's my favourite slightly inaccurate write up on the back of the book? He was really teasing that fan.
Yes, he was.
But not in a malicious way,
in a
playful, nice way.
Yeah.
You couldn't really take exception to his playfulness, because he absolutely acknowledges that he is the biggest fanboy out there.
Well, I thought he came across, actually, tonight. I met him a couple of times before. Mm. Well, when I say met, I've been in the same room as him, you know. So, and I thought he came across that as he was enjoying it, because he was quite bubbly, wasn't he?
He was very bubbly. Yeah, he was very, as I say, it was that all-pervading enthusiasm and feeling that you were somewhere special, and that you were going to witness something special.
Yeah. Because the last time I met him was at the premiere in Cardiff of The Magician's Apprentice. I met him there, and he was actually quite not dour, but he was quite, let's get this job done. He was quite but tonight I think he was in fan mode.
I think he was in fan mode, That's perfect what you just said.
Yeah, and it was great. So I mean, absolutely fabulous. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't think I've got anything. Have you got anything else to say, David?
I aside from, you know, let's encourage more animations supporting this one.
Yeah.
I don't want to say too much, because I want people to come to it afresh. I don't want to give out all the spoilers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just to say there are some lovely moments in it. Yes, it's a simulation of the original story, but also it has its own validity and its own sort of artistic form there. It has its own artistic validity, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It works as the soundtrack, and the soundtrack's beautifully restored.
Yeah.
All credit to Marquez for that.
Yeah.
And the animation's great.
Yeah.
And the actings are great, and the characters come to life.
Yeah.
And it's just such a precious thing, and it's just brilliant that they did it. And the fact they turned the whole damn thing round in 6 months is a miracle.
Yeah, absolutely. And
they
said they actually finished it. When did they say they finished it?
Last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? Incredible, you know. This is getting the thing out there, isn't it?
Mm.
So I'm going to say one last thing.
Mm.
I'm going to... Not concerning that, but we've kindly been given an extra copy of The Day of the Daleks, which we might be doing next, I think.
I hope that we do, yes.
Yeah, we're going to be doing. And I'm going to ask Dave, I'm putting him on the spot now.
Mm.
This one is available as a competition.
Oh.
So if somebody writes in with the answer to the question, which David is frantically trying to think up at the moment, and it's going, we'll get that sent out to you. It's from BBC Audio, and it's a gift. And just email us the answer at doctorwhoontarget@gmail.com. Mm. So I'm going to hand over to David.
I'm going to set my question. I won't make it too difficult. I would like to know, we've mentioned the original Dalek voice, Peter Hawkins, but I would like to know who designed the Daleks.
Oh,
that visionary who... we owe everything to. We should have mentioned him. We haven't mentioned him.
Yeah.
I'm setting him as a I'm setting the designer as a competition question.
That's brilliant.
Who designed the Daleks?
Fabulous.
We don't want Terry Nation back as the answer.
I bet we will, though. We'll get some Terry Nation. No, that's fabulous.
And the Day of the Daleks, all golden thread again.
Oh.
Could be yours.
Yeah, fabulous, fabulous. Well, that's it.
I have to say, I just look over there to your left.
Oh.
That is what we call a Waterloo sunset.
And it really is.
It really is. The sky is red.
Oh.
The sun's coming down in about 5 minutes.
Oh.
We're going to stop recording now, and we're just going to enjoy London, I think.
Well, the only thing, first of all, I've got to say thank you very much to David for getting the ticket for
Absolute pleasure.
That's great. And the only thing that can make this more perfect is see a Dalek saucer wobbling across this sky.
I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Anyway, thank you.
Yes,
thank you,
fantastic.
David.
Thank you, Greg. Oh. Thank you for coming.
Please tweet us at Doctor Who on Target, that's Dr. Who on Target, or email us at doctorwhoontarget@gmail.com. That's the end of this episode, and I would like to thank BBC Audio and Penguin Random House for kindly supplying us with preview copies, and to Smerin's Antisocial Club for the use of their version of the Doctor Who theme tune. The biggest thank you goes to you, our listeners.